I'm Mike Weir, Chief Revenue Officer at G2, the world's largest and most trusted software marketplace. And welcome to Go-to-Market Innovators, the series where we sit down with B2B revenue and marketing leaders to learn about the successes they've had, the challenges they've faced, and how they've used technology to create an aligned sales and marketing organization to drive their businesses forward. Today, I'm joined by Chris Hayes, who's the President and Chief Operating Officer at ZoomInfo. Chris oversees all of ZoomInfo's customer-facing operations, including customer success, onboarding, learning and development, as well as all aspects of the company's go-to-market organization. Prior to ZoomInfo, he managed high-performing go-to-market teams over two decades from global sales, marketing, and operation roles at Lucent and Avaya, to the company he founded, Inside Sales Team, in 2008, where he served as head of revenue operations until 2015. Chris, welcome to Go-to-Market Innovators.
Thank you, Mike. Great to be here.
Awesome. One of the central themes of our program is around creating sales and marketing alignment that helps better the growth engine of every company. But at ZoomInfo, you have both sales and marketing reporting to you. So there's no problem, right? No friction, no issues?
I wish that were the case. I mean, I've got great teams on both sales and marketing, but just like a lot of the customers that, you know, we serve and work with, you know, bringing sales and marketing together, even when they're under one umbrella, so to speak, has its unique challenges. The way I think about it is everybody's got a role to play in the funnel development from, you know, MQL to dollars sold. And though even though you're able to align those together and bring the teams together, there still is a little bit of friction and push and pull in that process, even when they're all under one umbrella. So it's not all, you know, puppy dogs and rainbows when they're all under one roof.
Yeah. And we take a little bit different approach. We don't we all roll up to the same CEO, but we are separate teams. I think we do share some similarity, though, that, you know, we think about and we see a lot of the evolution in the market and the tech that's enabling an aligned go-to-market changing. And I'm just kind of curious in your perspective as somebody that really does own tech within your own company, your platform that you're helping architect for thousands of customers around the world. You know, what are you seeing in the evolution that's helping sales and marketing stay aligned, whether you report to the same person or not?
Yeah, I think it is, like, from a tech perspective, maybe I'll talk about that in a second. I do think it is aligning to the different parts of the funnel and the goals that you have and how, like, an MQL and the volume of MQLs, the types of MQLs, whether they're inbound or outbound, the conversion rates and the conversion to dollars across the funnel. And a lot of that, being able to track and report on that, is basically having a system of record that can keep track and making sure you've got all of those things set up along the way. I think that's probably the key to keeping sales and marketing aligned, is sharing a common understanding of your part in the funnel and measuring your effectiveness in those parts. That's been kind of a key to our success for sure.
Yeah. And you've mentioned before just this really intriguing dynamic that's going on in the market about consolidation, right? And we're even, like, sales and marketing tech is merging in certain places, right? Like, proliferated for sure. Now it's merging. You know, I think you even said a very quotable one, like the Franken-tech stack. Can you elaborate on that for everybody listening?
Sure, 100%. I think, you know, as the economy's been growing and accelerating really since, you know, 2008 with the kind of the blip that happened with COVID, to your point, that the tech stack, the marketing stack, it proliferated. And people were out in the market buying, you know, what they felt were best-in-class point solutions to solve problems in that funnel that I described. And that worked for a little while. And then when things start to get a little bit choppier, a little bit harder, and expenses get evaluated in a different way, and people are getting forced into an efficiency matrix that maybe they weren't in before, then the need to, like, have all of those what you perceive as a best-in-class solution, you start to question that and realize, well, maybe there's actual benefits to be gained by consolidating. And, you know, we call it affectionately that Franken stack that's been built up. And so in the act of consolidation, you have two things that you can accomplish. You can have a savings accomplishment. I eliminated this spend here, or I lowered it, which is exciting. The other aspect is you can also oftentimes unlock efficiency. So even though we built these things and we kind of stitched them together, because they're not integrated, that lack of efficiency has an expense. You get a benefit from what you think is the best in class, but there's also taxes. So we're seeing that in the market. You know, we're doing it internally, and our customers are certainly doing it, evaluating investments that they had made 2 or 3 years ago and saying, is there a better way to do this? Is there a less expensive way to do this?
Yeah. I mean, the part you said that resonates a lot with me is that it's really about how these things can interoperate very well, right? How does this connect? Don't make me be the one that figures it out and hacks together a solution. And that's where, you know, I smirked when you first mentioned the Frankenstack, because I'm like, that does feel like what it is sometimes. But at the same time, if I'm playing the devil's advocate, you know, nobody can be best in class at everything, right? And so there's a question that I'd love your perspective on of like, how do you think about consolidated options with best in class solutions?
It's a great question. I think when I'm evaluating the impact that a piece of technology, a piece of software has kind of on the funnel from, you know, bringing a lead in to renewing a client or upselling a client, then understanding the impact that that has in that equation, what I'm spending on it. And if I get a solution that's maybe included in something that I already have, or maybe what might perceive to be a lesser solution, is that going to affect adversely that funnel in a way that the revenue that I'm giving up potentially is not worth the expense that I'm going to save or the efficiency unlock? And there's examples of that even in what we do. Like, we've got a lot of solutions in the market, but there are things that I value in my GTM that I need to go out and pay for. And just understanding the trade-offs there, I think, is a key element. And, you know, it's gotten, like I said, expenses are top of everybody's mind right now. So as you're looking for those efficiencies, just having a framework to evaluate the cost and benefit from best in class versus, you know, can I get by with the next best thing? That's how I think about it, Mike.
Yeah. I like that framework, because you're sometimes good is good enough, as we've talked about in prior conversations, but really connecting it to the business impact and saying, like, is good enough good, or are we going to meaningfully impact conversion and ultimately the end result that we're trying to drive to? Makes total sense to me.
Yep. And the other thing is the time dimension. Like, you might need to change a process. And so understanding what's the impact of that process change, is it going to take me a week, 2 weeks, 2 months, 3 months, and what's the resources I have to bring to bear? So that's part of the equation, but that's more of a, in lots of cases, it's a short-term trade-off, but it's also good to make that or take that into consideration.
Yeah. Love that advice. So when you start drilling this in, what should companies be doing better? Are there key things that you do exceptionally well at ZoomInfo that you've seen your customers doing that we all could learn from?
You know, it's a great question. I'm not going to break new ground here, but sometimes to make a difference, you just go back to the basics. You know, we were talking about it before, like ZoomInfo and I think G2 as well. You know, we're blessed to have people who come to us that want to learn more about us. We have a decent sized lead flow. People come in and say, hey, I'd like to learn more. And one of the things that we've done, and we encourage all of our clients to do, regardless of whether you get 100 leads a month, 1,000, 10,000, is to optimize that lead flow. And when I think about what that means for me and for ZoomInfo and what I try to impart to our clients is, it's an old adage, but it's a true adage. Speed to lead matters. Mike fills out a form. How quickly I follow back up with Mike is probably the single biggest impact to me getting Mike to progress in that MQL. And so we have things like data enrichment. We call it Form Complete. We have the websites product that gives us an idea about who's on the site. But using those to build out that kind of best-in-class lead follow-up thing, I think that's one thing that a client or customer could do fairly quickly, fairly effectively. And it, again, depending on the lead volume, it has a major impact. And, you know, we're always running experiments where we'll go out and we'll and don't be mad at me. I think we haven't done it to G2, but we've probably done it to some of the people who are listening to the call. We'll go in and we'll fill out forms on prospects and customers' websites, and we'll use like a high value title. So like Scott Sutton's my chief business officer. So I'll use Scott Sutton. I build an email alias for Scott. I put a phone number in that routes to another place, and I track how long it takes for somebody to get back to me. And I track whether or not they actually get back to me. And the fallout rate is like high double digits. It's not quite 50%, but you're in the 20 to 30% where you don't even hear back. And then the people who take over a day are generally 40% more. The group of people who get back in what I would consider to be a reasonable response time is generally under 10%.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a fun experiment to do. Yeah, it's pretty fun.
Oh, I just love the experiment. Isn't putting in Chris Hayes and in your email. I like that it's setting up one of your fellow executives to get inbounds. But that aside, I will use that technique for sure. The timeliness, like this is something that ZoomInfo is absolutely known for, you know, from yourself and Henry and others out there sharing and advocating. You actually inspired us at G2. We realized we weren't being ambitious enough. When, you know, when Henry spoke, I think it was at a Topo summit about 2 years ago, he had shared that, you know, everybody who's doing live outreach to ZoomInfo gets a reply in under 3 minutes. And so I did exactly what you did. I put my actual real information in because I was just like, no, this can't be. And I picked an odd time of day, like towards 5 o'clock-ish, filled out the information. I had a personalized outreach back in my inbox in under 2 minutes, like personalized to understanding who I was, what organization I was a part of, that I was a customer or not a customer, what I was interested in, and setting up a meeting with me for the representative that was assigned to my account. And I mean, one, like kudos, that was ridiculous for the secret shopping type stuff we do in this regard. You really live it. But there was another concept in here. Personalization. Everybody loves it. I think we should all aspire to it. But I think the other thing that I'd be curious for you to expound upon is, I think you guys do a great job of balancing scale and personalization. You know, it's challenging, but how do you think about it? How do you advocate for creating that balance within your team?
It's a great question. And I think we do really well at it today, but it's also something that when we talk with my leadership team, I think we're always striving, can we do better here? And the way I think about it is the benefit that I'm going to get from like hyper customization, is that benefit worth the time and the commitment that I'm going to spend to do it? Or if I take a message and I maybe make it a little bit more generic and that allows me to do it at scale, at a larger scale, and I'm only going to lose a little bit because I'm not quite as hyper-customized, then that's the trade-off that we try to get to. So we'll get, like literally, we'll get in a room, we'll figure out a message that we want to get to, and it'll start off hyper-customized, and then we'll spend time talking about how can I deconstruct that to where I'm not losing anything because, but allowing me to scale. And then if we can do that, great. If we can't, then we realize it's probably worth spending that extra 10 minutes to actually get that message out and to make it the benefits of the customization. The other thing that I think we've done a really good job of, when you talk about scaling, I talk about it in context. So like Mike, you and I talk a lot. So if I were going to send you a note, a message, I would need to be aware of the things we've talked about.
Yep.
Now, if James Roth, who works for me, were to send you a note and reference some things about G2 and maybe our relationship, it would not need to be as much. It would not need to be as contextually aware. So we also think about where does the message come from and where does that give me the ability to not be fully contextually aware of the conversations that might have been happening. And that, if you kind of weave that together with customization and lack of contextual availability, you get a pretty good outcome and a pretty scalable outcome.
Yeah. And what I keep hearing as well, though, is a mastery of the data behind your go-to-market. because everything you're sharing, you know, there's an implication that it's like, you know what your open rates are going to be, what your conversion rates are going to be, or at least you have projections of it. And then you're out there, you're testing and you're seeing like, how do we live up to those projections? That's interesting. Like how, you know, did you start from baselines? Like, how do you think about, you know, the target you want to reach and how much more you can get if you personalize?
We do. We, you know, you have to start somewhere. To your point, you got to have like kind of a, you have to have a start. And then we measure, if you think about like an outreach sequence or a workflow that has maybe calling steps or not calling steps, when you do that enough over time, you start to see, to your point, you start to see your open rates, you start to see your reply rates. And then we add a dimension on ours. We call it a meeting rate or a demo rate. And so when we send out a sequence, we're able to measure and benchmark that. How well did that do versus kind of the baseline in that persona, in that segment, good or bad? And if we've done really well in something, then we figure out, we, to the best of our ability, we figure out what that is that caused it, and we carry that forward. And if we've done poorly, we modify it. Another element that we've done, and not everybody talks about it, and I think it's important, if you're lucky enough to have an SDR team that's actually working the phones for you, one of the things that happens is when you drop stuff into a sequence or a cadence, and then you think about call coverage against it. So let's say I drop 10,000 leads or contacts into a sequence, and I don't call them, I just rely on email to carry it, then that meeting rate is going to be materially lower. If I add a call coverage segment, depending on the amount that I've covered, that I call 30% of them, 40% of them, that has obviously an impact on the meeting rate. And when you can kind of see those things coming together, where the act of an email plus a call gets to the outcome that you want, it gives you an idea about where you want to spend that outbound resource, the outbound SDR resource. It's another way to think about where to effectively use them.
Yeah. Love that. Love that. I think one of the things I'm curious about is, you feel like you were alluding to it, of how much are you thinking about this across marketing, BDR, and AE? Because it feels like you're customizing and you're thinking about it across who's doing the activity, how much should it be personalized? And just curious if you had any feedback for the group on that.
Yeah, 100%. I think about everything from a funnel perspective generally. I think I dream in funnels. So when I think about the SDRs and like the broad TAM, that's really where I want to go for scale and maybe forego that hyper customization. But when I get into, like, we're not afraid to market into our existing opportunities, which is something that wasn't always the case when I first started here, like the AEs or the AMs, where it was like sanctimonious. You stay away from my ops. These are mine. Marketing, stay away. We've gotten to a point now where we've built that trust. But when we do that, when we're marketing into an opportunity that's maybe stalled out, maybe we need to get a little bit more people in the buying committee, that's where that customization and specialization matters more. So I think about it as just the funnel, like where I spend my time, where I've got a broad opportunity, I'm not going to do any real harm here if it's not spot on, versus to where if I've got an opportunity that's worth $100,000 and I send an email that's like not really well written or not contextually aware, I'm going to do damage. But if I nail it, I have an opportunity to progress it. That's where we spend our time.
Love it. So to execute a sophisticated go-to-market like that, what role does tech play in unlocking these strategies? And, you know, what are you most excited about in the tech that's out there from, you know, let's start from just even in your own platform, because y'all are building a lot, launching a lot of great stuff. So start there and then let's work our way towards, you know, what else is out there that has you excited?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think when I think about where we are from a ZoomInfo perspective, maybe I'll start with the Sales OS piece, which is the product that we have mainly in the market. That's what people know ZoomInfo for, is we call it Sales OS. That's the integrations that we're building in and the workflow aspect of it. So a good example for that for me is the integration that we built with G2 Crowd. So, you know, G2's got this amazing intent product that the way I think about it is it's really close to revenue. It's close to deal. If somebody's on G2 researching a competitor or comparing things, and that's an open opportunity that you have, like that's a super impactful event. And so by building an integration into G2, into Sales OS, and with our workflow product, I'm able to automate a sequence that says, if Mike Weir is in an open opportunity that's in sales stage purchasing decision, and he's on the G2 crowd site comparing me to a competitor, then take this action. And I can, that action can be in an email. That action could be drop a display ad to G2 crowd. That option could be have an SDR call or just send an email alert to the AE. And those things are like, set them up and forget them. So you can build that process. You can just automate it and run it. And the lift that you can get out of like democratizing those plays is pretty powerful. Sales OS can do it without that G2 integration, but that G2 integration, bringing that back and being so close to revenue, like that's the kind of thing that gets me super excited. So that's one area I think on the ZoomInfo side too, the marketing OS, which is, you know, our offering for marketing, which is an ABM platform, similar story, integrations with like G2 Crowd or ZoomInfo's native intent tied back to our website asset, which basically is the de-anonymization of website traffic. We can put together audiences and measure those audiences and the interactions that they're taking, not only on your website, but across the larger, you know, purview of the web, and feedback to the sellers about who's in market, who you might want to reach out to, and you can automate plays around that. That to me is like the next level for ZoomInfo. It's a big, big growth opportunity for us. That's a product that we released, you know, middle of last year, Marketing OS. So I'm super excited about that one too.
Yeah. And so when you look at outside, right, whether it's, you know, products that, you know, you're welcome to plug products that you use from other vendors, but like what other tech out there is really exciting that's going to help, you know, marketing and sales organizations be their best?
I'll talk about a few. Like, enablement for me right now is a top of mind, is a top of mind initiative. You know, we brought in a new head of enablement here, Hang Black, who's been amazing. So when I think about enablement and what that means, because we went from, and it's not a dissimilar story to a lot of companies like us, G2 is, I think, similar. We went from we're selling kind of this one Sales OS thing, and we're selling it in a, like, this is how we sell it, to now we're selling multiple products. I've got Sales OS, Marketing OS, Operations OS, Talent OS. Then I've got Chorus Engage that kind of ride below that. Asking my sellers to be able to sell all of that and to interact with the different personas is really challenging. So we're really leaning heavily into enablement in 23 and beyond. And part of that was like the relationship that we have back with Seismic, as an example, is a company that I'm leaning on pretty heavily to make that content available and that information available. I think that they're doing really amazing things. The other one that I'm excited about that we get a pretty big lift out of is one of the things that I started early on at ZoomInfo at the time it was Discover.org was this kind of recycle mentality. Like, I don't want anything where I can make money, I want to make sure I'm making as much as I can. And that meant a lot of times going back and looking at what, for whatever reason, got discarded and figuring out what I can do with it. And we get a lot of leads in. I don't convert 100% of them to a demo. I convert a good amount, but there's still this cohort of people that I don't convert. So we're using a tool called Chronologics that basically we take our unconverted leads and we put it back into Chronologic sequences that send emails out and allow for programmatic scheduling. And it's a scale tool. And I do pretty well with that in a recycle motion. I make real money from that. I hope they're not listening because they're going to charge me more.
Yeah, we'll see. It'll be a great little test to see if, yeah, if you get a personalized outreach shortly after this drops. But no, thank you so much for sharing those insights around the tech that's helping empower a really strong, sophisticated go-to-market strategy. Now, I know we could keep going forever, but we've got to wrap, and I'm really curious, like, what's that one additional thing, any final takeaway that you would love CMOs and CROs thinking about every single day?
The one thing right now that's top of mind for me, and it's been that way for about 4 months now, and I'm making money from it, is going back in and reevaluating some of the processes and the structures and the things that we had done 2 or 3 years ago and saying, in a new lens and a new eye, can I do that better? Is that optimized? And I'm finding, like, we all grew really, really fast. We hired a lot of people, and you were doing things along the way that were good at the time, and you didn't always have time to go back and reevaluate. So that would be the advice I would sales or marketing or really anybody is, as your company was growing and accelerating and you put processes and structures in place that were good at that moment, have you gone back with a critical eye and said, is that really doing the best thing for me now? And again, I'm doing that. I'm challenging my team to do that. And it's having a pretty big impact. We're uncovering some things that are definitely not as optimal as they could be or they should be. So
that's excellent advice. Perfect words of wisdom for us to pause on in this episode. Chris, thank you so much for joining us and sharing more about the journey that y'all have been on and advice for all of us to be our best in our jobs and our go-to-markets.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, Mike. This has been real fun. Thank you.
Awesome. Cheers.